Hey everyone, and welcome to this special Soapbox edition of the Risky Business Podcast. My name's Patrick Gray. As regular listeners know, the Soapbox podcasts we publish here at risky.biz are wholly sponsored, and that means everyone you hear in one of these Soapbox editions of the show paid to be here. And this episode of Soapbox, I guess this has become kind of an annual thing. It's our once yearly catch up with Jared Chong, who is the Chief Solutions Officer of Yubico, makers of the YubiKey and YubiHSM. YubiKey is an InfoSec darling, really, because they are in the unique position of having a product that's popular both with security professionals like CISOs, while also being popular with security conscious consumers. Businesses get value out of YubiKeys, but so do normal people, thanks to key support being baked into services like Facebook and Google. And, well, as you're about to hear, there's a whole new category of use about to open up. Bank of America is launching FIDO2 U2F support for its customers, and that's a big deal. The more FIDO keys we get out there, the better, and the more enterprise options it actually opens up, because people all have the keys already. So, Jared and I chat about that in this interview, and we touch on a few other things as well, like how Yubico customers are starting to do some strange, hacky things with their portable YubiHSM product. And that's funny, because the last time Jared and I did one of these, I was really asking him about creative use cases for the YubiHSM. And people are starting to like load balance them and stuff now because they're quite cheap, right? Normal HSM's very, very expensive. These things are not even really a purchasing decision. And you can hear all about that in this interview with Jared Chong, which starts now.
2021 is this expansion of this huge experiment, which is how can this great technology stack, WebAuthn that we created, start to penetrate to other business applications and other, basically even consumer applications. So there's one thing that I think we have watched closely is what the financial industries are doing to adjust to this new reality. And I would say that there's a number of things coming down the pipeline as this technology becomes, I guess, implemented adopted at the next level. And so we are pretty excited about that as well. So the big news is actually that Bank of America actually making support for USB security keys with the FIDO standard. And one of the most interesting thing about it is that there's a recognition that we have to do better, and it starts with like the end user. And interestingly, they call it the FAQ section, it says, this is an option, an alternative method to authenticate besides SMS. Which is really very powerful as a statement, because we have known SMS challenges for a long time now. And being able to provide this as a very powerful alternative really sets the precedent for what we can expect from all services over time. And I think that's very impactful to a way of life, actually, because we if you add one more option for a user to select, you can actually remove one option, right? Yeah. Over time. So this is because what we always said is like, look, just having the only option or one option only, it just puts people in a very awkward situation. When you give people an option to sort of evolve without immediately removing something else, people can make a informed decision.
You make the SMS-based user base too small to bother targeting, right? Like that's one of the things that will happen as a result of this.
And you shame them, exactly, right? Over time, you just shame people on the SMS stuff. So I think that's where we as industry is headed, and really excited about that.
Yeah. And WebAuthn is one of those rare sort of good news stories, isn't it, out of security, where we appear to actually have a uniform approach to tackling one of the fundamental challenges.
Absolutely, right? So the WebAuthn conversation obviously is tied to what we've discussed with this, the bank making support for it, because that's fundamentally why they could adopt and implement it, because it's part of what you use every day. You know, when you open up your browser today and you use your iPhone and you use your Android devices, it's just there. You don't have to think about it. So the standards is important because it lays the highway, right? So then people can build new cars to get onto this highway. It was always this struggle, which is like, I can't build better things if I don't have the platform support. Like if I don't have, part of the native experience. What happens when you don't have that is that people do unnatural things. You know, let's just install an extension. How about that? Let's just download more software. How about that? So that becomes challenging from a security perspective, because then you're as good as, you know, any software you download can be malware as well. But when you have a better control with what's coming out of those really powerful devices that we have, it just works, right? You don't have to think about it. So the WebAuthn is very powerful, because when you have Google, Microsoft, and Apple adopting it into their OS, there isn't an excuse not to do this, to be honest. And that's why people are really evolving those conversations and implementing it now.
Well, you wonder too, if Bank of America is going down this road, you would imagine some of its competitors would too, right? Because you don't want to be the one left behind. It's usually how this stuff works, right? Like one does it and then they all do.
Absolutely. And I think that's why we're excited, because many of the regulated industries, who wants to be first? I don't want to be first. So it's a big step, you know, when you say, you know what, I will lead and the rest you can follow. It's a powerful statement. We definitely appreciate the team's work to get to this point.
Now, you've got some other news about that will help you get into other environments. I understand that you've actually gone through the FIPS certification process for some of your products. Is that right?
Yes, we did. We've completed a FIPS certification. Actually, two things happened here. We did a whole review of what we needed to upgrade from a certified products perspective. We actually certified both the YubiKeys, the 5 series, as well as the YubiHSM. And the two sort of parallel things, but actually very connected. Well, we did the YubiKey 5 because that had all the FIDO2 stuff. That was the FIDO2 and the kind of the passwordless experience on FIDO2, which you can just use an authenticator plus the PIN, or coming up with YubiKey biometric devices. It just works. So we want to make sure that we cover those YubiKey 5s in a FIPS perspective. But the other interesting thing that happened was that we went through the rigor of like, look, we have a product, YubiHSM, and there was a need to put them in certain scenarios that they need to be validated. So we completed the YubiHSM FIPS at level 3, which is sort of where most organizations would want to use it in a, you know, highly secure environment. And there are a number of interesting things that has happened since we released the YubiHSM with the FIPS certified label, which is use cases start to pop up. Interestingly enough, we talked about one of the things that I think we maybe mentioned before was we always talked about, oh, can we use several YubiHSMs to maybe balance the load, or maybe we can do some type of failovers. Interestingly enough, a number of our clients are pushing the envelope on what we can do. Now, we're still always limited by the USB latency, so we can't really...
Because this is a chat that we had previously, because I'm like, why aren't you using this for like, you know, SAML or whatever? And you're like, well, it can't handle the throughput. And that's really funny that your customers have said to you, hold my beer, and they're going off and they're trying to figure it out,
yeah, right? Exactly. Like, let me try it for you. Let me push your envelope for you.
So are they having any success with that? Because that is, I mean... That's pretty funny that people are hacking it together, because it's because HSMs, like normal HSMs for that sort of stuff, are just so expensive, right? So I'm not surprised people are trying to do this.
Yeah, there are a few things. So we're not going to solve the latency problem, but we can actually solve the concurrent connection problem, right? So there are, you know, some of our customers, and we love to, you know, from the audience perspective, we love to work with more and figure it out, because it just came to us. I mean, these people, like, so interestingly enough, several organizations in aviation, okay, military use, industrial use, manufacturing, also, you know what, it's time that we move on this stuff. And there are very interesting proposals on the table that we're working through. You know, it always, you know, there's obviously you can create some proxies, with doing several different tests with failovers and things like that, which we never really thought about, because we kind of needed the business to say, or the customers to say, hey, we really want to try this out, we need your help. But now that we've got this, interestingly, we've got the FIPS validated product. They're like, okay, I want to try it. So
so the FIPS, not the FIPS certification kind of unlocked that.
Unlocked that. And it was attempts, maybe it was just a justification. Like, look, these guys take it seriously, right? So at some level, you know, we talked about why do we need to put the product through a validation. And there are a few elements. I think it's useful. I think one of the things that it forces Yubico to do is like we have to really document the things that we say we're going to do. That's really basic there. But the second thing that actually is important is that companies actually look to that as like, look, this company investing in the industry, in their product line. Because as you know, this is not a cheap endeavor. This is investment. So companies look to it as like, look, Yubico is investing in the technology and putting skin behind it. Because it's not just about the technology stack. It's all the people and the process that go together with the certification, right? So that unlocks it from a different dimension. Well, obviously, they want the validated product, but they really thought of it like, look, Yubico is maturing. This product is maturing. It's time for me to look into some of these use cases that I've been kind of putting on the sideline for a while.
Surely you must have done at least a back of the envelope examination of whether or not you could introduce a low-cost, high-throughput HSM. Is that something you're looking at? Or if you are, you're probably keeping it to yourselves. But is that something that Yubico would look at?
No, we have looked at this product line for a while. And I think that it was a chicken and egg scenario, right? We said there's a huge market, but people would actually be able to do this, right? So is this like, do we invest tons more without having the business justified? And again, it's still a fairly, you know, new concept, to be honest with you, a portable TPM. How weird is that? Like, if I told you I'm going to create a business scenario and my business case and go to a VC and says I want a portable HSM, like, what are you talking about? So this concept is sort of a very novel concept. What it would be like to have a portable TPM, right? That was what we talked about. Then what it would be like to be a portable HSM? So now this portable HSM concept is really picking up because there are real applications here. And you can think of things that doesn't need to be tied to a rack. And there are many applications in the industry today, which is like, you want to do your code verification of something you are sending to someone remotely. How do you do that, you know, fairly securely with hardware, with keys and hardware, right? So you kind of do it with a YubiKey, but not really. You need some more power crypto processing in the device. So this unlocks a lot of things that people were siloed to think, oh, a HSM must be in a data center. It must be locked in. It must be X, must be Y. So when this evolved, people are like, hey, I'm no longer restricted to a physical location anymore. I can rearrange my threat model and create solutions that, honestly, the business have always required key material to be secured in hardware. It wasn't very easy. I mean, it's still not super easy today. And especially with the supply chain attacks, this now opens up very powerful use cases where I could store all my, you know, keys and hardware and then ship them wherever and then can do some additional, you know, verification of the session and things like that. So this is, for us, it's very exciting because suddenly all our customers are like, I want to try this out. Tell me more.
It's been a bit of a slow burn, the UBHSM, right? And exactly. And it's interesting because, as you say, it's like a new kind of thing and it's got to sort of find its use cases and find its markets. I mean, an obvious one for me is like, if you're doing regular code signing, maybe if it's a USB thing, you can just unplug it and keep it in a safe and only plug it in when you need it. And that gives you a certain level of comfort, right? Whereas, yeah, trying to pull a rack mount unit out every time, like that's a bit of a different vibe. You know, it's a whole different construct, I guess.
Absolutely. And actually, an interesting thing is that we introduced, I don't know whether the team didn't tell me, but they were looking this scump work thing, but they added this capability, which is now you can actually authenticate the UBHSM with the YubiKey, which is really cool because—
Yeah, it makes sense too.
Yeah, it makes sense, right? Like if you want to make your HSM operational, you need the YubiKey on the other end to really both authenticate and encrypt.
Yeah, and right? You can keep that in the safe.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think, look, you know, our teams are always innovating with things and sometimes you just innovate in things and like hope it sticks in, you know, in some fashion. But I think we're really onto something here. This is really a very exciting opportunity for us as a business to explore new problem statements that customers have in terms of key management and key problems that they have with software. You know, software search is still a problem, as you know. So this gives a new dimension on how we can think of solving some of these problems because it's portable.
Well, it's interesting too, because that problem from a cloud context is kind of solved, right? Because all the cloud providers sort of offer HSM as a service. But, you know, having an on-prem HSM, if you have an on-prem environment, which everyone kind of still does, having a HSM in every enterprise, to me, makes a lot of sense. But it's, as I say, it's prohibitively expensive. And people are using the UBHSM for some of those use cases. But as you say, it's kind of like got limited throughput, right? So I don't know. It's just, I'm going to be really curious to see what people are doing with UBHSMs in a few years. And I'll be also very curious to see what sort of products you're offering in that space in a few years, because I just have a feeling that it's an expanding use case. Like, there will be expanding use cases there.
Absolutely. And I'll give a tidbit. Look, we still live in the physical world. We have a lot of things physically delivered to us, right? And these things are made not in the cloud. They're made in a manufacturing floor, wherever they are, whether it's industrial or military or whatever. So the concept of just saying everything's in the cloud is not exactly the full picture when we talk about actually customers have a pain point, which people can go into a physical location and do bad things. And if you are suddenly just putting everything in software, there are problems with that. I would say that to the audience, look, you know, this is an exciting space. We love to work with anyone who is interested to learn about this thing and these new capabilities. We are always looking to innovate and help the industry solve the problem. And this is the huge problem. And besides the YubiKey problem, this problem of keys, right? This software keys situation, no different than OTP codes from a user. Software keys are a bane of a lot of the enterprises.
Yeah,
problems.
I mean, it's also a hard one to invest in from Yubico's perspective, because there's more and more hardware support for TPMs and whatever, and that kind of becomes a pseudo HSM. I don't know, which is why the portability here is kind of the killer app, but no one really knows exactly what to do with it yet. It's interesting. It's interesting.
Definitely interesting.
So, like, what sort of markets does the FIPS certification actually unlock for you? I mean, I'd imagine that would be a lot of government stuff and very heavily regulated industries. Is that right?
Correct. I think the two folds here, government agencies have to buy FIPS validated devices, and that's, you know, it's really a checkbox. They have to do it. And we do want them, right? So it's not good to have a set of YubiKeys that isn't validated. Then we cannot actually go help the agencies that need the protection. So clearly we need to do that. But interestingly, we've all heard right now, obviously in the world, about the executive order about trying to beef up the supply chain problems in the US. So it affects everybody that actually wants to work with the government as well, or want to work for the government or work with the government, whatever you want to call it. The impact is greater than just the government agencies.
Yeah, it's the whole
at the end of the day,
supply chain.
Yeah,
right?
It's the whole supply chain. So anybody that wants to deliver a solution set to the federal government, you know, they're going to want to have a FIPS validated device.
Certifications are a funny thing, though, because, I mean, I do recall that Yubico actually did have some vulnerabilities in one of its products, and it was only in the FIPS-certified products, right? It was like a FIPS-specific device. This is the thing, isn't it? Like, you have to change the way you do things often to get that certification, and it's bitten you once before. I'd be surprised if it bites you again, because people tend to learn from these experiences. But, I mean, how much re-engineering did you have to do to make stuff fit with the FIPS certification? It sounds like if you were FIPS certifying existing products, it was much more a documentation exercise than an engineering one.
No. At the end of the day, you know, any product would have flaws, right? I mean, we're not like, there's never a way you can say that everything is perfect from not just software, hardware, it's firmware, and everything is connected. So by no means we're doing our best, but there's no means that we can say, oh my God, there are no flaws in the YubiKey. I mean, that would be just outright not truthful about it. I think what we learned, though, is that when we go through the validation, whatever changes that we have, we actually realize that we shouldn't make too many exceptions to the main way that the YubiKey works, right? Because it's really important that you focus the same amount of resources to keep the code clean, any way you look at it. So by really focusing on making sure that the validated device is the same device that we are shipping to the customers is important. Because just from a hygiene perspective, you have less...
That's kind of what I was getting at is last time, you know, you had to sort of insert some craft to get your FIPS certification, and that's what bit you in the ass. Whereas this time around, probably the approach is, that's why I asked if it was more of a documentation style exercise, because you are FIPS certifying, you know, core products here, rather than trying to squeeze some craft into another special FIPS one that, you know, for this purpose. Is it a different thing this time around, I guess?
Well, I think that the way to look at it is that when we introduce the series has the same core base. Now, we at Yubico can choose to decide how to, what we call pre-personalize it, right? So that is really the distinction here. For example, you know, when we did the earlier FIPS certification, we added some additional vendor-specific things to the FIDO U2F capability, which really didn't fit well in the overall usage of how we should do it.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at with the craft thing,
so
right?
Yeah, we want to make sure that the YubiKey 5, which is where the FIPS, it's called the YubiKey 5 FIPS series, is, look, it is the same product from essence perspective, but it's kind of like, you know, frozen time, right? So that makes a difference when you look at it overall, because then the quality assurance from that perspective remains the same throughout. Now, look, I do want to also call out that, look, the YubiKey 5 series is set up a point in time. So while today these series kind of matches what the YubiKey 5 is, you know,
you're going to continue to update the 5, whereas the FIPS one has to stay static because it's the certified version. Yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So people will say, oh my God, I want the newest stuff. I'm like, well, there's a cadence. There's a cadence to do validated product, because in general, it just takes time. Independent of whether we are fast or not, that's a lot of red tape, right? So companies need to know what they are buying, obviously, right? They need to know that when you're on the FIPS series, you're getting this validation to meet your requirements, but it's generally going to have less new stuff, right? Because it is the long train.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. And then after a while, you'll certify up to a certain level, and then that will be frozen in time, and so on and so on and so on. That's just generally how this stuff works.
Absolutely.
Now, you are a private company, as far as I know, which means you don't really have to disclose sales figures. But can I ask what the trend line is in terms of, especially over the last sort of year or two, what sales growth looked like for a company like Yubico? Because it's all very opaque in that you're a private company. What can you actually tell me?
Look, the reality is that you can think of our growth as how you know, it's not some of the major startups that you've seen in the industry, but we're also not the laggard. So I would say that from a growth perspective, well, you know, we're doing good for where median is in terms of how overall companies grow, and there are a number of reasons for that. We are a profitable company. So there's some adjustments to, you know, why.
So
we
it sounds like what you're hinting at is steady, if not explosive, growth, which is kind of what you'd expect at this point, right?
Yeah, it's steady, and it's definitely explosive growth is steady, but it's not like gone crazy growth, which has its own set of challenges, right? I think that the important call out, which is we still are fundamentally a hardware company, right? There's a whole bunch of things that you have to adjust in the business to deal with material things. It's not overnight stuff. Like when we say, how long does it take to build a new YubiKey from scratch? It takes a while, you know, to build something completely different that the industry can standardize and scale. And those things have to be done right, because it's not just software. You just push a button, everything is magically updated. When you get this wrong, you're like, oh my God, we've got to recall stuff. We're going to ship stuff again. So there's a slightly different variance in the composition of growth, because we have to think of scale, which is, you know, hardware. Like people have to get things.
No, it's a completely different proposition to writing some endpoint tool that goes bananas and everybody wants it. And all you have to worry about is scaling sales and support, right? Like there is no real manufacturing in software.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah. And I think we are investing obviously in other services to help with the scaling of that business, both software side as well, with a number of the delivery services that we have. But fundamentally, you know, our prize is to make sure that the YubiKey stays a YubiKey.
So look, I want to finish kind of where we started, which is 2021. It's definitely the year of the ransomware crisis, right? It's got the attention of policymakers. It's got the attention, particularly in the US, right? Like this is issue one of the top ticket issues at the moment. I feel like the tide is about to rise on this stuff, but I've thought that before and I've been wrong. So I'm just wondering what your confidence is that this is the year that the, you know, I mean, obviously it's been flagged as a big issue, but what's your feeling as to whether or not there'll be sort of sustained push through here? And we could actually see, you know, the typical enterprise worker, because there was a while 10 years ago, there was a time when a lot of people, you would see them at a cafe in Sydney or whatever, they'd sit down, they'd put their keys on the table and, you know, have their coffee and you would see their RSA ID on the table. Yeah. That was a thing. It feels like we could be on the cusp of being in a similar place, but with Uber keys. But I suck at predicting crystal balls when it comes to like uptake on this sort of stuff. Do you have any feelings there, I guess, is my question.
You know, from a you know, Ubico vendor perspective, of course, I'm going to be positive of this thing. There's one difference here. Look, the entire ecosystem has to rise, right? So I don't think it would actually solve the problem only if we just said we just did better than the RSA devices for the employees. We have to look at the whole ecosystem, which is like, how can all users participate in this journey? And I think that's where we're proud of, which is like, because ultimately, look, a user is an employee.
Well, it's really funny, right? Because you always come back to this, which is, and it makes Ubico a really different sort of company to do these interviews with, because, you know, is it an enterprise tool or is it a consumer tool? And you always say, it's both, right? And that is kind of unique.
It is, and it has to be, because we cannot just solve for one user group. We are all going on the internet. It's not like employees go to a special internet that the end users don't go to the special internet. It's the same. It's the same internet. It's the same problems.
All right, Jared Chong, thank you so much for joining us for your annual big appearance on Risky Biz to talk through the way you're seeing things and some of your plans. It's always an interesting time, and I'll look forward to us talking again in a weekly spot later this year.
Thank you.
That was Jared Chong there with a chat about all things Ubico, and you can find them at ubico.com. And that is it from me today, and indeed that is it from me for a couple of weeks. I'm going on break for a while. I do hope you enjoyed this interview, but until next time, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.